Hi, this is Frank Dickens, and I want to welcome everyone to our podcast for the Broker University. And we are talking today about Broker Be Aware in handling foreclosures and REO properties for asset managers and banks. It's my pleasure today to introduce Richard Mack of Mack, Drucker, and Watson. Richard specializes in defending real estate agents in matters of real estate transactions and risk management. It's also our pleasure to have Lisa Robinson with Pinnacle Insurance Consultants, and she specializes in Arizona emissions policies throughout Arizona for real estate companies. And our standing president-elect, Holly Esslinger, with the Arizona Association of Realtors. She's the owner-broker of Exclusive Homes and Land. Holly has specialized in REO properties for the past 25 years in her career. And I will be your moderator today. I have specialized in REOs for the last 27 years, and it's a real pleasure to be here. So welcome, everyone.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Frank. Thank
you. Introduce yourself, by the way. Yes.
I did introduce myself. Frank Dickens with RE/MAX Achievers, and I'm the past president of the Arizona Association of Realtors. So we're going to jump right into our discussion here. And one of the things that we did at our Broker University is we took questions from brokers on what their concerns were and some of the things that they dealt with in the REO asset disposal for banks. One of the topics that came up were the listing agreements and some of the different languages that are contained in listing agreements and some of the pitfalls that brokers may want to be aware of in minimizing their risk. First and foremost, Rick, in the listing agreements, there are many of the asset managers and lenders who will make the broker, by signing the listing agreement, release the seller of any liability and any claims. What are the pitfalls or what are the issues with a broker signing that agreement and agreeing to that?
The pitfalls are primarily if you sign the agreement, and some of them are worse than others, but if you sign the agreement, the brokerage, to a large extent, takes on the liability the seller has. So if you say listing agent is going to make all required disclosures, make all required repairs, do everything, and assume effectively the seller's responsibility, if there's some surprise after the close of escrow with respect to property condition or something else, the broker has contractually agreed to undertake the seller's liability, which is considerably different than a straight-up garden variety transaction where the seller has their own liability and the broker has their liability.
And Lisa, what are the issues that you deal with in the Arizona emissions insurance policies, and how are those handled when brokers sign these releases of liability?
Well, what's interesting is, as Rick's saying, you're picking up all the liability for the seller, essentially. That I believe the indemnification agreement typically says it survives the termination of the agreement. So you're responsible to indemnify the seller. So you have to be sure that your insurance protection is in place and going to provide protection for what you've done, the duties that you perform, because if it does not, then that puts you in a position of defending yourself as well as a seller in a situation where you're going to, you know, have to defend yourself for liability, for negligence. What's really key, these agreements are typically spell out the scope of duties, what they are asking you to do. And this is really key in how you structure your insurance protection. From an E&O standpoint, ideally what you're looking for is that your listing agreement with the lender is going to allow you to operate as a real estate agent, broker, or property manager. And that is typically how your insurance responds. As a real estate firm, it's covering you for real estate agent, broker, and property management duties. When you step outside, some of these agreements are asking you to go above and beyond that and act as a property preservation specialist, an asset manager, and a lot of these policies aren't going to respond to those duties. So what you have to do, first of all, from an E&O standpoint, is to sit down and look at your policy and make sure it covers you for real estate agent, broker duties, and property management duties. The issues that are above and beyond a normal property management duties, for example, if you're doing renovation services, if you're acting as a construction manager, if you're doing analysis and evaluation of environmental hazards, things like that, you most likely do not have coverage in your E&O policy for that. So if your agreement is very broad in what scope of services they're asking you to perform, you might need to go purchase an additional E&O policy relative to property preservation duties. The E&O is probably the easier part of your insurance protection when you're working on REO properties. When you look at the general liability coverage, all right, now general liability is what's called third-party bodily injury and property damage coverage. It is not covered under your E&O policy, and it is additional policy that you need to get for your firm, and the REO companies are going to ask you to provide. That, we have some real problems with regards to REO properties. First of all, from a general liability standpoint, if you're a real estate office, your duties are selling, listing and selling properties. Your exposure is relative to listing and selling those properties. There are many underwriting companies that exclude that activity, so they write a policy for you and they say, we're not going to cover you for your off-premises liability, off-premises being those properties that you're listing and selling. So essentially, they're giving you coverage just for your office premises. If someone comes in your office and slips and falls, and that's not what you're looking for. So that's the first thing you have to look to do. The second thing is coverage for property management activities, which is a high-risk activity from a general liability standpoint. Many carriers do not write it. You've got to make sure if you are doing REO properties, you're most likely going to be conducting these property management duties, and your general liability is going to have to not have exclusion relating to property management, which would also encompass property preservation activities. So that's really important. You need to really, the primary goal is to sit down and review in detail this master listing agreement that you have with your seller, the financial institution. Look at it closely, understand it, let your insurance broker review it, discuss it with your attorney, because the goal is really to make sure you have the insurance protection that you need. And if you are not able to get coverage, you have to know where you're exposed, discuss it with your attorney, and understand those uncovered exposures, because you'll be taking on that risk yourself.
Is there a chance that brokers who are handling REOs right now may not have coverage in place for handling REO property?
Well, possibly, yeah. I mean, I would think that's the case. Some of the listing agreements that I've seen are pretty extensive in the duties that they're asking be performed, and I don't think the E&O and the GL are really tracking. So I think I would venture to say there are areas that you're going to be left exposed. If you have your E&O and general liability in place, then that's a good starting point. The GL is the one you really have to sit down and see if it's going to cover the property management and the off-premises exposure.
And Holly, how do you handle the liability issues when you review your listing agreements with your agents? What do you look for in your liability?
Well, Frank, before I answer what we do, I would just like to call to everyone's attention the fact that many times the broker never sees the master listing agreement because the agents who have negotiated these REOs with the lenders keep them in their files. So the biggest red flag is when you get an ER that is not signed and it just says XYZ bank or lending institution or something like that. You need to be able to have that master listing agreement. You need to be able to read it because there is a clause in some of the listing agreements, not all, but some of the listing agreements that actually talk about discovery and disclosure. This is absolutely huge, and I had never seen one until last year. It's always been in the master listing agreements there is disclosure, always, because we as brokers have to disclose if there's something that we know. But I have never seen one that says discovery. What that does is it shifts every drop of the liability from the lending institution back to the broker. And seeing that a lot of these master listing agreements are being signed by the agents, the brokers don't even know that they have the exposure.
And Holly, let me read one of these to you. This master listing agreement from Indy Mac, one of the broker's duties, subsection L says, a broker shall ensure that all disclosures required by applicable laws concerning the condition of the property, including but not limited to disclosures concerning material latent defects and environmental conditions or natural hazards, are properly delivered to all prospective purchasers.
That's discovery.
Yeah, that's key. But latent defect is a hidden defect. That's one that you can't see with the naked eye.
Yeah.
Environmental conditions are things above and beyond what we have expertise to discover or disclose. And natural hazards, I'm not sure what they mean by that. But at a minimum, the latent defects and environmental conditions are something that's beyond what you typically have for liability.
Absolutely. And so this is where it's so important from a broker's perspective and to reduce our risk as brokers. You have to be aware and you have to read very carefully these master listing agreements because your agents are agreeing to place you in a position of huge liability. And what you just heard Lisa say with regards to E&O, because she is my insurance agent with regards to my general liability and E&O, and we have spent a considerable amount of time, and certainly she has a lot more than me, trying to make sure that my policies are correct for the business that I do. Now, Frankie asked a question of me with regards to how do you as a broker protect yourself? The biggest thing that I have found is that I need to look at shifting some of this liability that I take on inherently by every listing agreement over to the selling company. And the way that I do that so that we share the liability is I make sure that in my broker files, I have the following. I have to have a Binzer, even though they are agreeing to an as-is property. I want to make sure that there's been an inspection done. So with that shifting that liability, they can accept the property as is or they can ask the seller to make the repairs just like, but the Binzer has to be in my file. The other thing that I want is I want a walkthrough. I want the buyer to say one more time that they're accepting the property. So now I've got two opportunities to shift that liability back to the buyer that they've said, you know, we've inspected, we've looked at it before we close, and we're fine with everything. The other thing that I do is I have a disclosure form, and everything that we have done on the property, if the property has had mold, and we've had RESA come in and do a mold inspection, the mold remediation, the bill for that and what was done, and then the recertification by RESA of the property that's free of any mold, we send that over to the selling company. And the selling agent, we ask, acknowledge the fact that we've released all of the documents that we have on the condition of the property during the period of time that we have had the property. Now, obviously, you can't guarantee anything before then, and we do not, as Rick just read to you, with regards to latent defects, the only thing that we're disclosing is what has happened physically that we have been involved in the property preservation of each one of these properties. So the big thing is, and these are not required, these forms are not required by ADRE, and I know that many brokers just look at their broker files and say, all I have to have in that broker file is what is required by ADRE. In our case, when you're dealing with REO, everything needs to be in your broker file. Everything. Every documentation that your agents have done, I ask them for what I call their keep on tops, where all of their notes about what they've talked to with regards to other agents, everything is in the broker file. One thing that I have found too is that you want to make sure that your agent and the other agent are communicating. And what I do is I talk to my agents constantly every day. I talk to every one of them every day that are handling these properties. I want to know, as a broker, where we stand on them and what the communication is with the other agent. I think that you eliminate a lot of your risk if there's communication. The risk comes when your agents stop communicating. So that would be one other thing that I feel very strongly about that protects us, if you will, as best that we can be protected.
And Frank, the other side of that equation, Holly does the listing for the REO side. The other side of the equation, the agents representing buyers, bringing buyers to the tables for these REO properties, my take is they have some pretty significant communication obligations as well, because the transactions that these folks are entering into have horribly seller-friendly addendums where effectively if it's a nuclear dump or whatever the case may be, there is no seller liability. So that the lenders, through their contract addendum, some of them are 10 pages long, single space, foist the liability or get it away from themselves onto the buyer or the agents. And a buyer's agent who doesn't have the conversation with the buyer saying, hey, look, this is a different animal. This is not a typical transaction. This is an as-is transaction. All the warranties are gone. You have no guarantee that the air conditioner is going to be in working condition, let alone even be there. The sink might not work. The plumbing might be gone. Someone may have taken the copper plumbing out to sell for scrap. All these things that would typically be protected by way of seller warranties aren't there. So the buyer's agents, the flip side of Polly's work, need to be very communicative with their buyers. And I've suggested they write an email effectively saying, look, this is an REO property. There are no warranties. You are getting exactly what you see. And if it's a train wreck, you bought it without any recourse as to the seller. So make sure you do your investigation. So I think that the buyer's agent's duties are heightened along with the buyer's inspection obligations are heightened because you just don't know what you're going to get.
And that brings up a very good point, is that a buyer's agent who may not be versed in REOs, and the broker may not be versed in REOs, probably has some extended liability in what they're reviewing. And so we need brokers to make sure that when they're selling REOs and acting as buyer's agents, that they're reviewing the documents. Lisa, that brings up a good point. If a broker doesn't represent an REO account, but a buyer's agent who works for that broker is selling REOs and finds that there's a little bit of a niche there and they start to sell multiple REOs, but they've never listed one, is the E&O coverage extended to them as a buyer's agent, or do we have the same pitfalls that a selling broker would have?
I don't think you have the exposure because it's the listing agreement that creates the exposure to the brokerage firm from the REO seller. So if you're representing the buyer, you're just expediting, you know, you're facilitating the transaction on behalf of the buyer without the significant liabilities of the listing agreement. So obviously it's a higher risk transaction, but you're not going to have property management duties just selling that property or property preservation duties as you're representing the buyer and purchasing that transaction. So it's much different, I think, coming from that side rather than the listing side with the REO property.
Yeah, and Frank, one other thing with regards to the buyer's agents, because I think that this is a really important point, and that is that the lender addendums with all lending institutions prevail. And let me give you an example of that. I had a discussion with a buyer's agent this morning on my way coming down here to do the podcast, and he said, your seller has 5 days to respond to the BINSR. And I said, no, because those 5 days have been taken out of the contract because of the lender addendum. And he said, oh, no. He said, the AAR contract prevails. And I said, no. I said, if you read the lender addendum and if your buyer read the lender addendum prevails over every other piece of documentation that is made a part of this contract. And he said, that's not true. And I said, you know, it is what it is. Your buyer has agreed that this lender addendum, by signing it, that this lender addendum prevails. And so with regards to the inspection, the buyer has 10 days, but the seller doesn't even have to respond according to the lender addendum. I cannot stress this enough. Where lender addendums are concerned, everybody must read them. You as a broker need to know what's coming in to your broker file. Your agents need to know what is happening when they have their buyers and the liability, when they have their buyers sign the lender addendums. And the buyers have to take the time to read the 15 pages, every word of it, and ask whatever questions that they have with regards to those lender addendums.
Depending on which statistics you listen to, the REO sales are 30 to 40% of the marketplace out there. So it's a huge chunk of the business. So, you know, if I get the chance to forecast the future, the wave of the future in terms of claims is going to involve REO properties in some fashion or the other. And my take is the buyer's agents are the bigger target because of the surprises the buyers are probably going to get because they didn't read all 15 pages, because they didn't understand that they absolutely got exactly what was there, nothing more, nothing less. But 6 to 9 months from now, my hunch is that's what we're going to be litigating over.
So, Rick, you're saying that the buyer's agents also need to be very proactive in making sure that they've reviewed all of the documents and that the buyers have reviewed all of the documents. Many times, in most cases, the asset managers will not provide any type of a disclosure form or even an encouragement for discovering things. What should we do with the seller's property disclosure statement that is issued by AAR in these cases where a buyer may not be informed of what they should be looking for?
At a minimum, the buyer should be given a blank copy of the seller property disclosure statement, and the buyer's agent should have the conversation with them that says, effectively, this SPDS is what you would typically receive in a transaction. There are six pages here. There are a lot of pieces of information that you would otherwise have access to. Your seller, in this case, because it is an REO property, is unwilling to sign this document, is unwilling to give you any disclosures. But use this as a tool. Use this as things you might want to investigate. Know that you're not getting any information about this from the seller, but use this as a guideline for your inspection and due diligence.
Rick, Lisa brought up the point of coordinating contractors and causing repairs to be made. What kind of liability does a real estate agent have or a listing agent have when they've hired a contractor who they know to be reputable and, in fact, they find out a year later that a garage door was installed improperly or that work was not done properly?
If they know that the contractor is a good, licensed, reputable contractor?
Yes.
Yeah. I think in that scenario, if it is otherwise a good contractor that's licensed and simply made a mistake, unless the listing agreement addresses it some other way, the agent should be okay and not have liability. If they hired a licensed contractor who they had a good track record with, all other things being equal, there should be no exposure. There are two caveats to that. If the listing agreement foists liability from the seller to the listing agent for that type of work, then they have potential exposure. And then the other side is if there is no license for the person they've hired, then nothing makes me cringe more than some of these REO folks or agents hiring handymen to do repair work, and handymen that don't have licenses, that's a recipe for disaster. They will have exposure. If they hire an unlicensed handyman to fix the garage door or the furnace or whatever the case may be, and there's a subsequent problem with it, I think it's pretty much guaranteed that that listing agent is going to have exposure and liability.
Great. Let's move on to signatures on the listing agreements.